I call this little presentation Baptist Heroes That We Should Know. People that we should have heard about. I never heard about these men, not one of them, till I started studying Baptist history. I always lifted up men like D.L. Moody, Billy Sunday, and they weren't wicked men. I think they loved the Lord the best they could, but you know those men never followed the Lord in believer's baptism. Not one of their converts followed the Lord in believer's baptism. That's how come what they did only lasted for their generation. Then when they died, what God used to work through them also died. These men, because they stressed the church, kept on growing. The movement kept on growing even after they passed. Okay? So Baptist heroes that we should know. People that we should have been taught about, but haven't been. And so that's a picture of the Sandy Creek Separate Baptist Church there. There's Shubal Stearns, and we already covered that. There he is preaching to the 16 people before they built the building, right when they got down to North Carolina. And you have right over here, there's Abraham Marshall, and there's Daniel Marshall. And they said when the artist did this picture, they took the people that were, you know, James Reed, the people that went with them down there. Shubal Stearns' parents went with him. Things like that. But 16 people in November 22nd, 1755, started that church. Then, in 2 years, it grew from 16 to 200 members. 600 members. In 3 years, it reached 900. We would call that a revival. In 17 years, at the end, and from 1755 to 1751, Shubal Stearns had planted 42 churches in 17 years, and under his preaching, 125 men were called to preach. That's revival. By 1820, over 3,000 churches could trace their roots back to Sandy Creek Baptist Church. And literally, in 50 years, 3,000 churches. And that is where the Bible Belt comes from. Okay, so that's why come North Carolina has such a high quota, or you should say a high per capita of Baptist churches. You go down there, literally, there's Baptist church on every corner. They still need to be reached, and you know the old statement, the Bible Belt needs a good belt with the Bible. Okay, that's a... okay, never mind. One of the historians wrote about Shubal Stearns and the Separate Baptist Revival. The word went forth from this Zion, it's talking about in Sandy Creek, and great was the company of them that published it, insomuch that her converts were as the drops of morning dew. And so we call, when you hear drops of morning dew, normally they're talking about the people that God used Shubal Stearns to reach and the men that were called to preach out of there, and that's what we're going to look at tonight. Drops of morning dew, and that's where we're getting that. The first one would be, I told you the 12 men used of God in the forming of our nation. Here's the list, and we went through that, and we touched on it in the History of Liberty lesson. Names that we should know. And the men in blue are Baptist preachers. The men in black are politicians, you could say. Men in government office. And the men in green are Protestants. Okay? Now, that was our list of 12 for the forming of our nation. And we listed them in order. Okay? Men that we should be associated with and men that we should understand. For instance, let me give you something. Most people don't know what a democracy and a republic is. The word republic means rule by law. The word democracy means rule by the people. We're not a democracy. Isn't it interesting to know the word democracy is not found in the Declaration of Independence, it's not found in the Constitution, and it's not found in any of the 50 state constitutions either. That's because a rule by the people normally associates itself with rule of those of mob rule. That's where it goes to. And our founding fathers did not want a democracy. They wanted a republic. A few of them wanted to make George Washington the king of America. And they said, no, we know a monarchy and an oligarchy won't work. We want a republic. A rule by law. That's why the Constitution is so important. You don't want anybody stepping on that Constitution. That's just a little thing. Tonight, what we're going to look at, we're going to look at these 10 men. We're going to do it as quickly as I can. But these men were the drops of morning dew, men that were saved out of that revival. And I know I've mentioned to you Samuel Harris before. I just mentioned to you Daniel Marshall. But let's look at these men. Okay? What I did was, Daniel Marshall, for instance, born 1706, he was converted at age of 20. But it was not until he was 38 that he heard George Whitefield preach. And here's a saved man that's been saved 18 years, and he hears George Whitefield preach, and he comes under conviction to live for God. He surrenders his life. He sells his house. And he says, back then, in the colony of America, he started working with the Mohican Indians. They started working with the savages to live in huts. He worked with the Mohicans until the tribes had a war, and he had to leave for his own safety. But they knew that he loved them, and it was along the Susquehanna River. Then Daniel Marshall he helped Shubal Stearns form the church at Sandy Creek in 1755. At age 52, he had one driving thought. Daniel Marshall, Jesus is coming. Jesus is coming. I'm going to see the one that saved me. And they said that was his driving force. That's what drove him. And he is called a tireless worker. He started, watch this, at age 52, he was ordained the pastor of Abbots Creek Baptist Church. That's the first creek Shubal Stearns started. First church started out of that church was Abbots Creek. This is 2 years after they got it going. By now they're running about 600. Then he established churches in Virginia. On preaching tours, would go up into Virginia. He baptized Samuel Harris, that we're going to look at tonight, Colonel Samuel Harris, the Apostle of Virginia. He planted Bear Creek Baptist Church in South Carolina. He planted Horse Creek Baptist Church in South Carolina. From Horse Creek Baptist Church, he started going from, as you're looking at the map, from South Carolina, he started going over the border there into Georgia. And he took two preaching trips. He was jailed in Georgia for preaching. And they said, this was the words, come no more as a preacher. And his words were, and these are verses, that's the reason we didn't turn to a text tonight. These are verses every Christian ought to understand. This is what Daniel Marshall said when they put him in jail. Acts 4:19 says, Peter and John answered and said unto them, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye. Acts 5:29 says, then Peter and the apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. What will you do? Interesting. You know, we're looking at persecuted Baptist preachers. But when they said, you can't preach here anymore. All the Baptist preachers we're going to look at tonight, they would always say, you may not come here and preach for 12 months and one day. And they would say, or you're going to jail. They said, well, I'm not stopping preaching, so you might as well put me in jail. What would you do if they outlawed soul winning? Would you go soul winning? We knew the day was coming. Oh, Barack Obama said he's going after the Christian schools. Why? Because for every student that's in a Christian school, the public school loses how much money? $6,000. He said in his first term, I'm going after the Christian schools. Now we're watching that happen. What will you do one day when they say you must put your child in a public school? The days, I hope Jesus comes, really. But we ought to obey God rather than man. And that was their theme verse way back then. If it's wrong to hearken unto God, then men, he said, you go ahead and judge. He said, but I'm going to do what God commands me first. And that's what the lessons of our forefathers gave us, these Baptist preachers. Daniel Marshall, he in 1772... Shubal Stearns died in 1771. In 1772, he planted and pastored the Keokie Baptist Church in Georgia. He pastored that church for 20 years. It was the first Baptist church of any kind in Georgia. Remember, what was Georgia? A penal state. That's where England would take their prisoners, and if you were sentenced, you weren't bad enough for death, but you needed to be exiled out of the country. They put you on a ship, take you to Georgia, kick you off, and say, now go live. So Georgia was a place of criminals. It was a bad place to be. Daniel Marshall saw the other side of the tracks and said, I can start churches over there. And he did, and he went right into it. When they'd see a wedding, taking place, people getting married, they stand up and start preaching. He and his son, his boy, is in his 30s now, Abraham Marshall, Daniel Marshall. In 1772, he planted this church in Keokie. Then he planted churches. He planted one church in Virginia. He planted two churches in North Carolina. He planted six churches in South Carolina. And he planted six churches in Georgia. He is an older man. He's now in his 70s. And that's 16 total Baptist churches planted in his lifetime. What a man. 16. That's how come, you know, they asked me questions when I was candidating here. We're gonna see men tonight that pastored five churches at once. You say, well, that was back then. I know, but we're supposed to be able to do a lot more now that we have vehicles and technology and all that other stuff nowadays. But I made the statement, do you remember that, Brother Bernie? I said, I'd like to pastor more than one church one day before I die. And somebody said, you probably shouldn't have said that at a candidating question meeting. People aren't used to that. But you say, where'd you get that? From our Baptist forefathers. Our Baptist forefathers. Abraham Marshall, his son, lived from 1748 to 1819. He followed his father in pastoring the Keokie Baptist Church there in Georgia. He pastored that church for 35 years. Then Abraham Marshall's son, Jabez Marshall, followed his father, and he also pastored the Keokie Baptist Church there for 23 years, and they kept planting churches out of that. Dad, son, and grandpa pastored the one church for over 70 years. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Tidence Lane. Who's Tidence Lane? Tidence Lane was an older brother to Dutton Lane. You see the dates he was born there, 1724 to 1806. He was converted under Schubelstern's preaching. It says he went to a meeting, and before the meeting, Schubelstern's was seated out underneath a peach tree with his Bible open. And he said, I saw this man under the tree, and he said, and I was just amazed by him, and he said, all of a sudden he caught my eye. And he said, I thought he had an evil eye at first. I looked away, and he said, I thought it would help if I went up to him and tried to greet him. He said, when I walked up to him, Schubelstern's was very short, and he said he was sitting in the tree, and he said he held my stare, and he said, I thought that would help. He said, when he got up to preach, Tidence Lane said, I started shaking, and he said, weeping, and he said, and I fell to my knees, and he said, and I got saved. Tidence Lane was one of Schubelstern's converts. At the Battle of Alamance that we covered last time, the first battle of the Revolutionary War in 1771, after that, 1,500 families, if you looked at the map, you've got North Carolina here, 1,500 families went directly west into Tennessee. 1,500, a lot of people went there, and they started. Tidence Lane is the first Baptist started the first Baptist church of any kind, Buffalo Ridge Baptist Church in Tennessee. So if you're from Tennessee, Tidence Lane is a good hero. So Tidence Lane, he goes there. One of his largest contributions was he and his seven sons and the men of his church fought as the Over the Mountain men in the Battle of Kings Mountain. If you've never looked it up, Thomas Jefferson said the Battle of Kings Mountain was the turning point where Cornwallis did not get to reinforce the troops there. They lost the battle to the Over the Mountain men, and 1 year later Cornwallis would surrender. George Washington would win. Thomas Jefferson said this was one of the key battles in the Revolutionary War. So the Over the Mountain men, Tidence Lane, he and several other Baptist churches led in that. And if you've never heard of, we've all heard of Paul Revere, right? The British are coming. We were taught that since we were in elementary, right? Did you know Paul Revere's ride was only like 12 miles? And it was good. It was good that he, you know, the British are coming, you know, and that was good that he gave the alert. When word needed to get out that the men needed to assemble to fight on King's Mountain, a man named Martin Gamble did a 100-mile ride in 24 hours. But he was trying to get through the mountains and let the people know that they had to assemble to go fight. And now I can't remember his name, the colonel's name there for the British, but anyways, Cornwallis was away, but anyways, I'll get that. But Martin Gamble did a 100-mile ride in 24 hours. That means he was riding that horse full, and the horse would drop, and or he could tell the horse was getting ready to drop, and they'd give him a fresh horse, and he did that. I think the ride was like 30 hours. Can you imagine being on a horse at a full run for 30 hours? And so there's another hero. But the Over the Mountain Men, that was a turning point in the Battle of Kings Mountain, and that happened in 1780. Colonel Samuel Harris. He was one of the, he helped in the French and Indian War, and this was a very dignified man. He was converted under the preaching of Joseph and William Murphy, otherwise known as the Murphy brothers. And Colonel Samuel Harris came in full war garb, came in the back of the church, and back then they had the belly heaters, the wood heaters. And he stood behind the stove and was hearing Joseph preach. And he hadn't heard preaching like that. It says, as the man of God continued to preach, it says Colonel Samuel Harris sat down and started taking off his war jacket, and he had his sword by his side, and he dropped his sword, and Colonel Samuel Harris was saved under that preaching. He was baptized by Daniel Marshall as he would go up into Virginia. And he became what we would call the Apostle of Virginia. He preached many times through Virginia. Virginia, what was the name of Virginia before, you know, before it split? Remember Old Dominion? One of the biggest areas in the colonies. Virginia was very powerful. It was Presbyterian at that time. Daniel Marshall is used of God. He baptized him, and then Samuel Harris starts preaching right away. Robert Baylor Semple, Baptist historian, he said Samuel Harris was George Whitefield's equal in addressing the heart when he preached. He said every time Samuel Harris would stand up to preach, this is a military man, this is an educated man, he said he always went right for the heart, and he said and tears would start flowing, and he was a great preacher. He was a great leader. Samuel Harris himself planted 24 Baptist churches. 24. He also had it. He was known for his tremendous burden for souls. He would preach the gospel everywhere. Then under his ministry, John Weatherford, Lewis Craig, and his brother Elijah Craig were saved. And we'll learn about two of those men tonight. He baptized Samuel Harris baptized James Ireland and Elijah Baker. Samuel Harris, if you go to his gravesite today, it's under a tree, it's in a pasture, and the only thing that marks his grave is a rock. It's not even a tombstone. Isn't that interesting? These are men that were heroes. These were heroes. Everybody should know about Samuel Harris. Great, great preachers. God used him in a 6-year time period. The next revival that would hit Virginia, they would go from 1,300 Baptists in the churches. That revival takes place, and almost 4,000 Baptists. Why did God need to do that? Because there were two states when the Constitution was ratified that would not ratify the Constitution. Rhode Island and Virginia. Why? Because God caused a revival, allowed a revival through Samuel Harris in Virginia. And that's where James Madison and John Leland, remember, would shake hands and say, we'll ratify your Constitution if you'll give us a Bill of Rights. What does the Constitution do? Remember, a republic is a rule by law. What does the Constitution do? It does not give you your freedoms. It protects your inalienable rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are inalienable. You can't separate those. That's what the Constitution does. The Bill of Rights gives you your what? Your freedoms. Freedom of speech. Right to bear arms. All that stuff. Okay? So you need to know the difference between the two documents and their importance. So that's Samuel Harris, great preacher. These are drops of morning dew, Schubel Stearns's converts, you could say, or fruit from the Separate Baptist Revival. Next man, Lewis Craig, converted under the preaching of Samuel Harris. While Lewis Craig was being convicted, he hears Samuel Harris preach, and he starts following Samuel Harris to the preaching meetings. I don't know why he just didn't get saved, but this is Lewis Craig's story. And when you read it, he would preach, and before Samuel Harris would get up and preach, Lewis Craig would help round up people. He'd say, come hear this man of God. I'm a condemned sinner. I'm on my way to hell. I'm a wicked man, and you need to hear him preach because he's going to tell you how to go to heaven. Come and hear this man of God. And Titus Slane did that for, I think, several weeks. Then he got saved. He preached constantly of sin's destruction and God's redeeming love through our Savior. He established the Spotsylvania Baptist Church, and he also was used of God to plant six other churches. He was in prison many times for preaching. He was, in 1768, he was the first Baptist preacher jailed in Virginia, in Spotsylvania. It's June 4th, 1768. You say, what's so important about that? Did you know Virginia jailed more preachers than any other colony in America? Second of all, everybody heard of Culpeper? The Culpeper jail held more Baptist preachers. Now, they were jailed in Spotsylvania, Middlesex. They were jailed in several of the jails, but Culpeper jail is jailed more Baptist preachers before the revolution than any other jail in America. Okay? And it was over 40 preachers. So, he is the first one imprisoned, and then, I'll tell you about that. He was saved under Samuel Harris, but we'll make reference to the jury here. There was a man sitting on the jury who heard Lewis Craig get up. And he said, I just want everybody to know something today in court. He said, you know, when I was living like the devil and drinking, and he said, and my whole life was wrecked and ruined, none of you took matter of me. He said, but I get saved and start living for God. He said, and I attract the whole attention of the county. He said, you can do anything you want with my goods. He said, I take it gladly. He said, I'll suffer for the Lord. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that wild today in America? You can cuss Christianity in the public. The schools can. They can down-talk it. You can talk against Christ. But if you mention a Muslim, you're a racist. If you speak anything against anything else, you're automatically a racist. That's how they use racism to control people. Do you understand? And that's what you're starting to watch and happen in society. But you can cuss God, you can cuss the Bible, but you can't mention anything about any other religion. But of course, you're always welcome to. I think that's horrible. I think that's horrible. But those are the days and age we live in. Those are the days and age we live in. In 1776, Lewis Craig's church experienced revival within one Sunday. He had over 100 people saved and baptized. Can you imagine that? In his church, when one Sunday, 100 people got saved and followed the Lord in believers' baptism. This is the second revival that many give credit to Samuel Harris for. September 1781. Lewis Craig is in Spotsylvania because he'd been in jail several times in the persecution. They just said, you know what? At that time, over the Allegheny Mountains was the frontier. Tennessee, Kentucky, you could say, obviously, Alabama wasn't there then, but as far as, they said, you know what? They need churches over there. Guess what he and his church did? His church was running over 600. He and 600 of his church members said, let's all leave Spotsylvania, Virginia, and let's travel. They traveled 600 miles, as you're looking at the map, from Spotsylvania, the Cumberland Gap. They traveled that and went up into what you would call modern-day Kentucky. Can you imagine that? You know, did you know their whole purpose was this? Let's all 600 of us go, get in our wagons. You know, everybody kind of lived in a log home back then. They said, let's go to the frontier and let's plant churches. Because they knew they weren't going to have a church run in 600. But they wanted to go to a place and under Titus Lane's leadership, start seeding the whole area with churches. Can you, the people caught the pastor's burden. Now we look at that nowadays as far as saying, you're following a pastor? That's following a man. Not when the goal is to start churches and lead people to Christ. That's cultic. That's a cult. Not if it's to plant churches. He was looking at the men in his church saying, that man could pastor, that man could pastor, that man could pastor. You know what? If we go to the frontier, he didn't know it was going to be Kentucky. He said, but they're settling over there, and just like the revival we just saw under Schubel Stearns, we need to go to Kentucky and plant church. Can you imagine 600 people? They did it in 4 months. Left in September, got there in December, and then started planting churches in modern-day Kentucky. So if you're in Kentucky, or if you're anybody from Kentucky, Okay. Nobody's from Kentucky. All right, but if you're from Kentucky, Lewis Craig is your hero, okay? He's the first Baptist preacher there, and I just love that story. He's known as the man with the traveling church. Did you know it is said as they traveled, these were rugged people. Their whole purpose was to, you know, if you move to an area, there were no paths. Daniel Boone was the only one that had went that far. They went over the mountains in the Cumberland Gap. It says they sang as they went. They'd all sing hymns, you know, with their wagons and stuff. Places where the gospel had never been sung about or preached. They get there. What's the first thing you do when you get on the frontier? You got to build a house. They didn't mind. You know. Do this, make your plantation, and then, man, let's build our church, and wow, let's get going. These were rugged people. These were rugged people. And their whole purpose was to get people saved and to plant churches. Okay? That's kind of neat. Next, Lewis Craig, John Waller, and James Childs were in court. And this is what they were charged with. The attorney said, "May it please your honor, these men cannot pass a man on the street without attempting to ram scripture down his throat." Does it sound like they were pretty aggressive in passing out gospel tracts? Did it sound like they were pretty aggressive? Hey, we got to tell you about how to get saved. They were that aggressive. When we tell you, this inspires me. I like looking at this. They were sentenced to jail. Lewis Craig preached through the grates to his converts. Lewis Craig ended up calling another pastor to come and baptize 9 of the converts that got saved outside the jail while he was preaching to them. I just think that's wonderful. They would preach through the windows. Acts 5:42, "He truly and daily in the temple and in every house they ceased not to teach and preach Jesus Christ." I believe that's a sign of revival. When you're doing everything you can to get people saved. You're working at it. You want to put me in jail? Fine. I'll preach through the window at the people outside. You'll see this again here. John Waller, named Swearing Jack. They nicknamed him. He led an ungodly life during his younger years. This is the man who was on the jury in 1768 and heard Lewis Craig's testimony. He heard that and he said, "Whatever Lewis Craig has, I want to live for that." And Swearing Jack, they said if there was any devilry to be done, Swearing Jack Waller was always at the heart of it. And they always said, you can't have a sinful time without Swearing Jack. He had quite a reputation. He gets saved. He starts preaching. He's baptized by James Reed over here in Orange County, Virginia. He was ordained a pastor in 1770, and a great revival took place in his church in Partlow, Virginia. Spring of 1771. He's preaching in the pulpit, and I'll tell the story. John Waller was preaching, and back then the doors to a church, the magistrate, the sheriff, the county clerk, and three men came in. One of them was on horseback, and as John Waller's reading his Bible, he sees them obviously come in. If somebody rode a horse into church, you'd know they were there, right? The clerk took out the whip and put the end of the whip on his Bible. And John Waller continued reading from the Bible. Then the guy rode up by the pulpit, turned the whip around, and you know, had a handle with that ball at the end, shoved it in his mouth. Then the clerk came up, grabbed him, they took him outside, and the sheriff beat him. I mean, beat him. And then took the whip and whipped him and gave him scars he carried to his grave. Now, excuse me real quick. I know that it wasn't a small church, but it wasn't like a huge church, but ain't nobody touching my man of God while he's preaching. Amen? You know what I mean? I don't understand the thinking. Now, maybe that's the Marine in me. I don't know. But if I was sitting out there, you ain't playing with my preacher. I don't understand it, but there were many cases. When you look in the Virginia imprisoned lives of Baptist preachers in Virginia by Lewis Peyton Little in his book, he documented it. There were many men that while they were preaching, they would come in, grab them, and take them outside, and then, I mean, beat them. One man, 20 men came in the church, they were so angry, grabbed him, took him outside and nearly drowned him, saying, "Stinking Baptist, you want to baptize somebody?" And they took him out to the river and they held his head under it. It says they almost killed him. They were so angry at them. One man was beaten. See, you can't read this with a Hollywood mentality. You get hit in the head with a 2x4, it can kill you. But you watch the Chuck Norris movies, you know, where, you know, you get kicked, you know, 50 times and then you get up and you hit in the head. You can't read. That's Hollywood. These men, sometimes it says, were beaten till they were incapacitated. This is before life insurance and all that stuff. He was beaten without trial or indictment. As soon as he was done being beaten and they whipped him like this, he came back into the pulpit. I just love this. Here's this man of God, bloody, his body bloody and swollen, and this is the verse he reads. He starts preaching from Exodus 27:20, "And thou shalt command the children of Israel that they bring thee pure olive oil beaten for the light to cause the lamp to burn always." And you know what his sermon was? Beaten oil is best in the house of God to give light. He had just gotten beaten outside, and that was his text verse for his sermon. You couldn't stop these men. That is just beautiful to me. I just, you know, well, I just had a whipping out here and beating, and I think I'll go home and rest tonight because I need... You couldn't stop them. You couldn't stop them from preaching. That's just swearing Jack Waller. He preached for 35 years. He was in four different jails in Virginia for a total of 113 days, four different of them. He baptized in 35 years. This is... riding around, he baptized over 2,000 people. He also ordained 27 preachers and he planted 18 churches. And for a time, this is the man that pastored five of those 18 at once. Aren't these men amazing? We would think, wow, where'd you get the idea of pastoring more than one church? Our forefathers. You couldn't stop them. Anything to get souls saved and plant churches, that's swearing Jack Waller. John Weatherford, I think you'll enjoy this, he was converted under the preaching of Samuel Harris, Colonel Samuel Harris. At age 18, he preached 70 years all throughout Southern Virginia. He was jailed in Chesterfield in 1773 for unlicensed preaching for 5 months while he was there. This is John Weatherford, whenever I hear that name, this is the man that made the guards so angry, he would preach outside the grates also. Preach the gospel. And he would hold his arms out, and the guards were so angry, they'd take their knives and their swords and they'd cut his arms while he'd preach, and the blood would run down the outside of the jail. That's John Weatherford. He preached through the grates. They cut his arms. He took those scars to his grave. The Chesterfield jail ended up, they built a wall outside the window because they got tired of the church members coming to hear John Weatherford preach. So they had to erect a wall outside. So guess what? His church members had come out there, they'd put a white hanky on a pole and they'd raise it up over the wall and then they'd wave it. "Preacher, we're ready. We're ready for preaching." Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? Then, he was a champion for soul liberty in America. I'll tell you more about the walls here and preaching through the jails, preaching through the grates. This is a great man. This man was secured. His freedom was secured one time. Patrick Henry paid his fine. And that's a little story that's beautiful if you'll read it in the Baptist history book there of how Patrick Henry defended Baptist preachers. And I can't go into that tonight. And, good, okay. James Ireland, another great preacher. He's born in England, but he moved to America out of rebellion and a hard heart, and he got into a life of sin. After earning a reputation as a wicked man, he began to be convicted of a sinful condition, and he was converted in Berryville, Virginia. He attended the Sandy Creek Association camp meeting. This is while Schubel Stearns is still alive in 1769. And he was convinced of believer's baptism and was baptized by Samuel Harris and ordained by Lewis Craig. He immediately starts preaching. He was jailed in Culpeper for 5 months and he was persecuted by the authorities. This man goes down in history as being one of the most persecuted Baptist preachers in America. They put, while he was in jail, the authorities left the jail and they would let sulfur be burned outside and they tried to suffocate the preacher. Because back then, you know, there wasn't any glass in the windows. Then they tried to poison his food. They tried to blow him up with gunpowder. They were so angry at his preaching. One time when they poisoned his food, it got to one of his daughters, and his daughter was killed from the food poisoning. Can I just tell you something? The loss of a family member when you're serving the Lord is hard to take. But he didn't quit. He could have said, "Man, God, I'm trying to serve you, and then my daughter dies." Can you imagine knowing somebody else trying to stop you poisoned your daughter, and she dies? Then his persecutions, he was beaten several times, permanently injured his health. He was preaching through the grates of the jail. They would build the wall again, and the people would come and raise the white flag. "Preacher, we're ready for you to preach." And the guards were so angry. Here in this jail, they would mount their horses, and the church members would be gathered outside, and they would ride their horses at a full gallop all the way through the crowd, trying to hurt people and bump them. They would take hornets' nests from trees and throw them into the crowd, trying to get the crowd to disperse. When he preached, one time a man put a table up by the window and made his water in his face while he preached. This is the type of persecution. You see, nobody told us about what happened before America was established as a country. What did the Baptists go through? They went through incredible, incredible suffering as they were preaching, and nothing could stop them. He was an itinerant preacher, and it's amazing. Today, when you go to Culpeper, there's a building called the Culpeper Baptist Church. That is the site of the old jail. The jailhouse was turned into the church house. Amen. And there's two places in Virginia where that took place. He was an itinerant preacher, and he planted four churches. He's buried today, when they say, in an unmarked grave. And when you go to the field, it's a big field with a tree line, they'll say, "This is the field somewhere where James Ireland is buried." Another unmarked grave. A hero that I think should be marked. We're coming to the end of it. John Corbly, 1732. Born in England as a boy, as an indentured servant, he agreed to serve 4 years for his passage to Pennsylvania. He moved to Berkeley County, which I think is just amazing because we used to live there. He moved to Berkeley County, West Virginia. He was led to Christ by John Gerard. Has anybody heard of Jaredstown? His dad started Jaredstown. That's where it's named after. I didn't know that. I used to drive through Jaredstown. I've been through there many times. Okay, now I'm learning the history of it. How come I couldn't do it when I was there? but anyways, he followed John Gerard, the pastor there, followed the Lord, led him to Christ, and then John Corbly followed the Lord in believer's baptism. He began to preach. He was jailed in Culpeper many times. He was taken from the pulpit several times and beaten. That's in the Virginia records there, and that's easy to see. In his time, this is an amazing man. John Corbly birthed 30 churches in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky. John moved his family to Redstone, PA. And he started 3 churches there. He planted the Goshen Baptist Church and 2 more. May 10th became the turning time for his life, and his life was never the same after 1782. On his way to church, he and his family were attacked by Indians. He said he was behind, walking with his Bible open, and his family was up ahead. And he was looking down at his Bible, and his family was quite a bit, and he heard his wife scream, and he looked up, and the Indian tribe had come out, and she was carrying their newborn in her arms. And they took and scalped her and killed her and the baby, and his only son had buried a hatchet into his head. And that was before, he said he started running, and he never made it there in time. his daughters was hiding behind a tree. He had two other daughters. When they came out, one of the Indians had a rifle, and before his wife was killed, when you read the thing, bottom line is his only son was killed. Their newborn baby was killed. His wife was killed. And his two daughters were scalped, and it said they only left an inch of skin around the head and took the whole scalp off. The girls lived, and on the wife's tombstone it says, when you see Elizabeth Corbley's, it says, "Beneath the Indians' tomahawks, me and my baby fell, was hurried suddenly away with Jesus for to dwell." I don't know how long it would take to heal from something like that, but here's what's absolutely amazing about John Corbley. He planted 30 churches in his lifetime after his wife and his boy and his baby and his wife, his boy, and his baby were killed. And while it says his daughters had to go through healings, in other words, he in his letters New Jersey. In the letters that he was writing to his friend, he said, "I don't know how to help my girls." He said, "They're saying, 'Daddy, my head hurts.' How do you help somebody?" He said his daughters eventually healed. But he said in a letter that this was almost the ruin of him. Can you imagine your companion taken from you? Yet after his wife was killed, he planted 16 more churches. Excuse me, what a man. You couldn't stop these guys. They were absolutely amazing preachers. And that's why I call this heroes, Baptist heroes that we should know. You got time for just one more? Lewis Lunsford, two more men. Lewis Lunsford was converted at the age of 17. It is said he had the reputation of being called the Wonderful Boy. Because as a teenager, he started preaching immediately at age 17. And they said the presence of God was so with him when he preached. They said it was just like angels were preaching. He was melodious. He'd fetch tears from the eyes. They said he was more of a traveling preacher. But watch this. He preached all through Virginia. During his preaching, three churches were established. He was known for his traveling at any cost, and he traveled one time 120 miles in 50 hours. 50 hours on horseback, wouldn't stop, just to make it to his destination. Great men of character, great men of work ethic. Then, I'd like to point out here, this was an evangelist that was also a church planter. And I think we would do well to think, you know, nowadays when we think of an evangelist, we think of somebody that travels from church to church. Right? Goes from Sunday to Monday and Tuesday and sometimes Wednesday and then I don't have a problem with the older guys, but the younger guys, do you realize in the Bible an evangelist was a church planter? Do you realize what the old evangelists were? They would travel and preach and then they would establish churches. Because there wasn't a lot of churches to go to and just go every week to. And I wish we'd get back to that. I wish we'd learn from our Baptist heritage. An evangelist is somebody who is a church planter. And they go around and help establish churches. Almost done. He was, one time he got up to preach and he's preaching on that text, "God forbid that I should sin against God and ceasing to pray for you." And he got up in the pulpit. I love this story. And Lewis Lunsford said, "I'm so burdened tonight." He said, I don't know whether to preach or pray. And one member said, "Pastor, I want to pray." And it said the members of the church got on their knees and they started weeping. And for several hours, the preaching meeting turned into a prayer meeting. And he started with it, but he just said, I just feel like I don't know whether I'm supposed to preach or pray tonight. And one member said, "Pastor, we need to pray. I want to pray." What a beautiful story. I think that's a beautiful story of revival. Lewis Lunsford's probably one of the most traveled men and in through Virginia. And then finally, tonight, Elijah Baker, the last one. Who's Elijah Baker? He was born in Virginia, and he indulged in many vices in his early life. He lived a wicked life. He started attending Baptist meetings. And then he was converted under the preaching of Jeremiah Walker, and he was baptized by Samuel Harris, Colonel Samuel Harris, in 1769. This man, Elijah Baker, listen closely, he established, I put the first up there, but he established 24 Baptist churches and planted them in his lifetime. He planted 12 churches in Virginia. Then he did it along the coast. His specialty was the coastal area, the Far East. While he's preaching there, he gets put in jail, and a man named Thomas Bastian comes up to him while he's preaching through the grates, and he said, "Would you ever consider coming up and planting a church in Delaware?" And Elijah said, "Well, I'm a little tied up right now." But when I get out of here, listen to what happened to Elijah Baker. He is preaching through the grates, through the jail there, and I believe he's the one that was known for, while he was preaching through the gates, they'd throw apples and stones at him. Now keep in mind, there's no glass, there's just jail bars, and they get so sick of him and his preaching that the authorities kidnap him. They Shanghai him. They take him out to a ship. And they tell the owner of the ship in the Virginia coastline, they say, "Take this man to Europe here and get rid of him. We don't care where you let him loose. Just let him loose. Take him across the ocean." That was on a Saturday night. The captain worked Elijah Baker through the night. Next morning was Sunday morning. So Elijah Baker said, "Captain, would you mind if I prayed and read the Bible with the men?" The captain said, "I don't know why that would hurt." Revival broke out. Elijah started preaching. He took his Bible. He started preaching. Revival breaks out, and the man of the ship ends up letting him go. And they said, "We can't make it to land. We're not at a landing port, but you can get off here." So they throw him overboard. He swims to another ship. He gets on the ship. Same thing. Two revivals break out on two ships. That one, the captain didn't enjoy the revival that was happening, and he throws Elijah Baker overboard. But revival breaks out twice, right? Elijah swims to shore, and guess who's the first person to meet him? The man who had been back in Virginia. He's now in Delaware. And he says, Thomas Bastian meets him and says, "You're in Delaware. Wow, soaking wet. Glad you made it." You know, he goes on into Delaware. Did you know he planted 8 churches here in Maryland along the coast? 8 churches. Then he goes to Delaware and he plants 4 more churches. He is, that was what I was telling you, the Accomack County, Virginia. That's where they met. And I just think this is an amazing man. 24 Baptist churches in his lifetime. I asked a man named, I'll say this and I'll close. Planting churches, I think, is what we're supposed to be thinking about. We're not supposed to, I love our church growing, but when you look at the area for us to reach this area, it's going to take more churches. If that's our focus, we'll have fun, we sing, we're going to have a fun time, I think, on watch night. We can do all that. But did you know our purpose is supposed to be planting more churches, reaching the area? And I asked Bud Calvert, a man over here in Virginia. He's now retired. I think he's in his 70s. I asked him at a conference about 5 years ago. I said, "So you're retired?" I said, "Did you plant this church, the church that we were in up here? It's Kenny Baldwin's church, Crossroads." I said, "You planted this church? They run about 400. 350, right around there." He said, "Yeah, I planted this church." He said, "I planted one church every 10 months. I said, "How many churches have you planted in your lifetime?" He said, 36. 36 churches. One of the biggest ones of them, I think, runs 1,200. I think several of the others, the smallest of them runs 300. I just thought, what a life to look back on your life and think, wow, God used me to plant 36 churches that preach the gospel. That's our heritage. That's our heritage tonight. Heroes that we ought to know about. And I never learned about these men until I started teaching Baptist history. And I know I didn't have pictures of them tonight and things. There's not a whole lot of pictures of them. But I hope your heart is stirred.